So first I want to start off with a prayer, because I really feel like I want God to guide us and direct us in this. The second epistle of Thessalonians in the 3rd chapter verse 5 says that basically says, now may the Lord direct your hearts into the love of God and into the patience of Christ. It's in the love of God that the revelation of who God is found. And it's in that revelation, and it's abiding in the love of God, that empowers your life, that gives you direction, that gives you, I mean, everything that you need is found within the love of God. And I'm not just talking about this pretty idea of the love of God. I'm talking about this tangible revelation of the love of God. The word direct in the Greek, it means to guide into, and not just to guide into or direct into, but it also has a definition that is the removal of all hindrances.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things that hinder us. There's a lot of things that hinder us in this life. And I just want to pray that God open our hearts to receive the word that we're about to speak about. I want to pray that God really guides us, gives us vision, gives us direction, teaches us his love so that we can in turn love others. And I hope that this podcast strengthens you. I hope that it encourages you. I hope that it corrects any area of your life that you may be struggling in. And that is my prayer for this year. I really pray that God direct us, that he remove the hindrances from our life, the real hindrances, and that he lead us into an area of love and patience and revelation of who he is. With that being said, I ask those things in Jesus' name. Let's amen. Start the podcast, though.
Amen, amen.
Yo, welcome to the Unchained Podcast. I'm your host, Keelan Martin, joined by the Bible scholar, Charles Leger, a.k.a. Granddaddy. If you're curious, we're just two guys looking to spread love, hope, and joy across the world by sharing with you the gospel of Jesus Christ and how it changed our lives. And we made this podcast so we could specifically show you how it's going to change and impact your life as well. So we aim to take this message across the world, and you can help us do that by going to anchor.fm/unchained. That's anchor.fm/unchained. And from that page, guys, you got three options. The first option is called More Places to Listen. Click it, guys, and then you can listen to us on your favorite podcast station that helps keep us on the air. Or you can click the button right below that and you can donate to help keep us alive. You can make a small monthly contribution, or you can leave us a voice message and tell us how this podcast has changed your lives. Thank you, guys. Hey, yo, welcome to the Unchained Podcast. I'm your host, Keelan Morton, joined by the Bible scholar, Charles Leger.
I don't know if I'm going to be a Bible scholar today, because we're talking about a topic that is...
He's still granddaddy, though.
Yeah. I'm being granddaddy.
He's still granddaddy.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. You better hope it's another 30 years before you come a granddaddy.
It better be. I still believe in the backhand. In other words, if you come home and tell me you got a little girl pregnant, I'm going to backhand your teeth out.
Oh man, most parents should believe in that backhand.
Yeah.
But yo, I can't remember what episode this is. I can't keep track of it. I gotta count them up. But anyway, we have done a lot of them. We like 34, 35 in, something like that. Which compared to others been doing it 4 or 5 years, I see how it takes consistency to keep coming up with fresh material, trying to organize your thoughts, your ideas. So, but praise God, we done made it this far.
Yeah, and let's say this. So most of the time, we don't organize our thoughts or ideas. We just go off the cuff.
Yeah, we do.
Really, yeah. Most of the time, we go off the cuff.
But see, that's a blessing, though, because God aligns the conversation a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but here's the thing. Like, if you ain't mesh with nobody, you can't go off the cuff. He'll be fighting on the podcast.
Yeah, sometimes you butter it up, man.
Oh, man. So, Charles and I have been talking, and we kind of wanted to address this a little bit sooner, and we kind of touched on it the last podcast. And of course, right now we're looking at protests. We see how social media is taking it's already been evil, but now it's taking a huge demonic turn with just how people are attacking each other on Facebook. Instagram is getting
self-proclaimed Christian.
Yeah, it's getting out of hand, man. So hence the post yesterday. I was like, yo, I think I'm gonna just post exclusively through the ministry site. is just do away with the whole personal joint, man. I just get tired of the whole childish aspect of it. And, you know, we do want to address, this racial divide that we're experiencing right now. And we want to talk about it from several point of views.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to let's say that we want to address this racial divide that social media platforms are propagating.
Right. And we want to do that factually. Like, we don't want to do it with just like haphazard ideas or like my opinion. Now, granted, we will share our opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, yeah. we've looked at a lot of...
We've been listening to a lot of different people's perspectives. I've been talking to my brothers from another mother and another color.
Yeah.
And asking them about their experiences, you know, just to kind of get an idea. And the reason I say we want to talk about how social media platforms are propagating this racial division is because I'm sitting next to a black man right now about to talk about racism.
Right.
I walked out of work this morning with a black man and talked about racism, and there wasn't any hatred, and there wasn't any, oh, you white supremacist or you Black Lives Matter advocate. There wasn't none of that going on.
Right.
None of it. I had a great conversation with a few of my black coworkers lately that had nothing to do with hatred or racism.
Right.
You know, very, very, very good guys. So
Let's line it up this way. You know, and I believe it's in 1 Samuel chapter 16, a very popular verse where it refers to like the outward appearance and how God actually sees the inner man.
Oh, yeah.
Of somebody. Yeah, when he chooses David. Now, I do want to line it up with this particular phrase. And it's a phrase that a sniper would use. It's called a vantage point, which is a good way to see something. So it's a very affording way that you can get your eyes on the specific target.
The right perspective.
Right. So I remember there was like a movie called Vantage Point, and what they did was they scoped the downtown area. When there is a shooting, they go, okay, what was the vantage point for them to get that shot? Because we had the perimeter like heavily secure, but somehow this shooter found a good vantage point. He found like a chink in the armor to where he can get that shot off. Now, I don't want to use it in that context, but I want you guys to actually just kind of listen to what we're saying.
Yeah, think of that.
And think of, you know, the vantage point, because another thing that we're going to address is how everybody thinks they're right in their own mind. Everybody's leaning on their own understanding.
Their own experience.
Right. So you think you have a vantage point and you're speaking on social media from your vantage point.
And that's another thing that I want to add to that, because I heard that the other day when I was looking at some stuff. I know I heard God say to me, I don't want you to ever reduce a man to a statistic because of the color of his skin.
Right.
Rather white or black.
Right.
I don't want you to look at a post on Facebook that says black men commit 98% of the crime in this country. I don't even want you to consider that, because one, that statistic may not even be true.
Right.
Two, if that statistic's true, what percentage of black people does that even include?
Right.
Because I know all kind of black people in the hood answering them questions. Exactly. Like, yay, I'm gonna come up to you and say, how many crimes have you ever committed? They're going to tell you, get the up out of my face with all that nonsense.
Right.
I feel like God was telling me, I'm not going to reduce a man to a statistic, rather white. I'm not going to look at a statistic on the internet. I've seen a statistic earlier on the internet that said the median income of the white household was $171,000 a year. And I thought to myself, man, I missed that bus. I don't even make half of that, bro. I make about 70.
You just ain't there yet.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe yet, but I still ain't there. So that statistic is a lie, bro. It's to promote a narrative.
And that's the thing, is like a lot of people are taking those narratives and they take those statistics. And you gotta think about it. When you hear a stat, you gotta ask whose calculators that comes from.
And whose perspective.
Exactly.
Because for every Look, I can find. Let's just throw something out there. Let's talk. Let's say systemic racism. I could find statistics that say it exists. I can find statistics that say it doesn't exist. And both of the people putting those statistics out there are normally federal bureaus.
Right. So, and here's how you can view that, Charles. We used to have this saying that if you dig for a booger long enough, you'll find one.
A booger?
So that means if you want to look for stats that favor your argument, guess what? You're going to find them.
You're going to find them.
If you look for ones that disagree with your argument, you're going to find them. So it depends on what you're looking for. Yeah. So if you're looking for racial inequality, guess what? You're going to find it.
Hey, you know what? I want to find a stat that maps out political corruption.
Hey, I'm sure you're not going to find many of them. They're going to hide those stats.
So, but let's talk about this right now, because these are some hot topics. Let's talk about systemic racism.
Okay, so let's do this in point of view. So let's say systemic racism point of view. That as is one point of view, we're going to view this one as.
Yeah, yeah. Is it, let's say this, is it real or is it fake? My personal opinion, I think a lot, there is definitely some realness to it. You know, you could research all this stuff, man. You cannot. So if I look at developmental psychology, I cannot say that the pure hatred and oppression that black people or people of color suffered in this country for hundreds. I'm not even gonna say when the first slave came to the states, because it wasn't the states yet; it was just colonies.
Right.
But let's say even after we became the United States. 1776, and then what, the Civil War was like 100 years later. Well, I hate to tell you, but racial equality, they didn't just all of a sudden decide to free the slaves and everything was rainbows and lollipops and racial equality was at the forefront of their mind. There was absolute hatred, inequality, social injustice, all the way up until really 60s and 70s. You still finding stuff that is, you know, crappy,
right.
Shady. And then when you start to look at the system, you start to find things like, you know, banks redlining certain neighborhoods that are predominantly black and not giving them loans, not putting money in their neighborhoods. You start to find things like, and not saying that still goes on today, because I haven't found one article that can prove that still goes on today. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I'm not saying one way or the other, but it definitely went on. In the 60s and 70s, which would be your dad.
Yeah.
My dad.
Right.
Which is, that's like throwing a rock across the street. That's,
yeah.
That's right there.
Yeah.
You know, that's not that far down the line to where all of a sudden the black communities have just recovered from all of that oppression. And we could talk about CIA agents flooding the neighborhood, black neighborhoods with narcotics. We could talk about politicians flooding neighborhoods with narcotics. We could talk about, I mean, just all the shady stuff that has happened in the black communities. And it's absolutely affected young black men and women in drastic ways.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Let's say systemic racism. I don't know if it exists still today as much as they want it to. I know it definitely did not that long ago, though.
Right. You know, and I can't really say that, you know, they're plotting somewhere. It's like, hey, how can we how can we further destroy the black community? I can't say that's a thing, you know, but I can't say that's not an idea that crosses people's mind or, you know, in some areas, some ways or form. I'm not saying it either, but
so if you listen to some of the stuff Joe Biden said in the early 90s when he had that major crimes bill passed,
yeah.
That seems like that was what was on his mind.
Yeah,
let's cripple and destroy the black community. Let's force mass incarceration, and then give them the drugs so they can hang themselves with them.
Right.
That's what it,
yeah, that's what it sounds like,
bro. That's what I mean. I'm gonna just be real with you. That's what it looks like. That's what it sounds like. Listen, if it looks like, how do they say that?
If it looks like a duck, if it quacks like a duck,
it's probably a duck.
Right.
But if it looks like a snake and it slithers like a snake, that thing might be poisoning.
Right.
Yeah.
But dude, it's like, and here's the thing. I don't believe that there is, again, like today, systematic oppression where you can't find, you know, well, you can't find opportunity.
Well, yeah, so let's go into that.
Yeah.
You hit on that. Let's talk about choice.
Yeah. So I don't believe that you cannot find, you know, opportunity. And some of y'all are like, well, oh yeah, I don't have the same, you know, opportunity. And you live in that neighborhood, So I don't have the same, yo. You know, I was talking about this morning, about being, like exposed to certain things in your life. And it's hard to say that, somebody who grows up, you know, in the hood and very, very low income housing has the same opportunity as somebody who grows up in the suburbs.
Yeah.
These two individuals will have two different upbringings based upon the choices of their parents.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I can't sit up there and say that I haven't had opportunity, because I had, again, you said, use that word choice. I had opportunity to hang with the thugs or stay with them,
but I
chose different. Right. And so you're talking about somebody who grew up in, an apartment complex called, Noel Crest Apartments in Nashville. That's like, to my earliest memory, that's where I started. Now, if I had to paint a picture of how bad it was, they wouldn't deliver pizza there if it tells you anything.
Yeah. So it was bad.
It was bad. If you can't get a pizza delivered, you it's bad.
Yeah.
But you know, I also have people like my grandparents. They value education very high on education. So my grandmother was a special education teacher. And my grandfather, you know, he taught education. I mean, he's built inner city schools. He was a principal, you know, and his wife was in education. So
yeah.
my roots, you know, they value education.
Yeah.
So because she worked hard for what she had, even though my grandmother grew up poor, and she grew up in an abusive household. She grew up like in, you know, 38, bro. So
so she grew up in, so she could. Rightfully so, she could probably say, "Hey, yeah, I know a time where racism was real."
Oh yeah, she's seen it.
Yeah,
she's seen it.
Yeah,
and so she's never taught me to be racist, but you know, just some of the comments she's made over the years, it wasn't the fact that she was racist, is because she's still, she was still dealing with the trust issue.
We were talking about that the other day,
right?
The developmental issues that spring from that type of experience.
Right. So it wasn't like she was saying, you can't hang with white people. She was like, yo,
don't be careful. Don't trust them white folks.
hey, like, you can hang out with white folks, but be very careful.
Yeah, yeah.
be
yeah,
careful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't even think it was just so much as like the person as much as she was like, you don't know where their background.
Yeah,
you don't know where they come from.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I come from a background of people who value education, and to have that modeled in front of me, of course, what you have modeled in front of you, that kind of dictates your route, or, you know, because you will often lean towards what those before you have went after. You know what I mean? So if my grandmother had decided to, you know, do the wrong thing, not work, you know, depend on the government, you know what I'm saying? Like that would have shaped, you know, my identity a little bit.
She chose to get it.
Right.
But let's say this, your grandma is above average.
Yeah.
Because most people don't fall into that category.
They don't, because I absolutely went to school where, dude, all they knew was dope.
Yeah, yeah.
All they knew was fighting.
Yeah.
All they knew was alcohol.
All they knew was that life. So, and this is my thought, and I want to just kind of spread some, let's spread some psychological knowledge on the whole thing. Let's throw that in the mix so we can add this to people's perspective. So I take black people, I put them in a ghetto. I put them in a housing, living right on top of each other. They ain't got nothing. They ain't got no money. They were slaves at one point. We decided to free them, and we didn't give them nothing. We get, what is it, 40 acres and a mule?
Yeah.
you get what I'm saying, right? We really didn't give them nothing. And listen, I'm a white man, so if y'all don't like what I'm saying and you white, oh well, deal with it. So we didn't give them nothing. And then we put them on top of each other in extreme poverty, which creates a necessity for survival. You can look at any great psychologist. I'll use Maslow, for example, where he writes about the hierarchy of needs. And basically, at the very beginning of a person's needs are those things that we need for survival. So I take a group of people. I put them right on top of each other with no money and nothing, no way to make it. And so they're gonna eat. They gotta eat. They're going to do what they got to do to survive. If that means they got to rob somebody, they'll probably rob somebody. That means if they got to cross the tracks and rob a white man, they're going to cross the tracks and rob a white man. And then let's say 10 years later, I decide not to lend them no money. And then 10 years after that, I decide to start flooding those neighborhoods with drugs and then taking the fathers out of the home by incarcerating every single person who gets caught with the drugs I put in the neighborhood. Because when you really sit back and think about it, how did black people who have absolutely nothing get all kind of dope in them neighborhoods?
I mean, you put no money to buy them.
No money to buy them.
Unless you robbed a cartel.
Yeah, and you're going to die. Well, back in those days, we could probably say it was probably more the mafia.
Right.
Them Italians. But you know them Italians are going to cut you up and put you in pieces somewhere. You're going to die. You're not going to rob them. They may give you dope, whatever, yada, yada. You know what I'm saying. I don't want to get too off into that. I'm just trying to paint a picture. So, the father's not in the home. The child grows up. If you look at Eric Erickson's stages of development, man, one of those first stages is trust or mistrust. And then I think shame versus doubt or shame versus autonomy. I can't remember. Initiative versus doubt. I can't remember exactly what all the stages are. But basically it is this. The child either either learns how to trust or develops mistrust. No father in the household. Mama's not around. She's strung out on drugs. The neighborhood ends up raising this child. Most of them are selling drugs. Most of them are doing drugs. They surrounded by this lifestyle that is absolutely destructive. Their trust is shattered. They trust no one because they haven't been taught that they could trust anyone. Then you reach this place where the child starts to become autonomous. In other words, meaning self-govern.
Yeah. He starts to emulate what he sees.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. During that self-governing process, there are a few things. There's either shame or I forgot the positive one that could be created. There's a couple of baseline things that are created. And I don't remember. But basically, if trust is shattered and they start this governing process where the child is learning how to govern themselves and all they're faced with is shame and doubt and every time they do something wrong, mama's screaming at them, or every time they do something wrong, stepdaddy's beating on them, then they start to develop what is believed by Eric Erickson as a sense of badness. In other words, meaning...
Hello, why are you writing this down?
because I'm connecting my thoughts.
And I got you. Okay.
I don't know. I do that sometimes. A sense of badness. Now, this is developmental psychology, y'all. You can look all this up. You can look Eric Erickson up. He's one of the leading psychologists when it comes to developmental psychology. A sense of badness. My God, is that not plaguing the young black man, male, today?
Right.
Look at all the music. Look at the image that's presented. They all want to, listen, if you're white and you're listening to this, you better be concerned because it ain't just a black problem no more. I can pull up over there in Sequoia Hills.
Yeah.
If you know Knoxville, they got nothing but money. And right at the light, I can watch two white boys pull up. Bumping Kodak Black.
Right.
They want to be gangsters. They grew up not even just in the suburbs. They grew up with some money.
Right.
In multi-million dollar houses.
Exactly.
So it's everybody's problem. It's not just the black community's problem.
Right. And so here's another issue that that we're facing. And so again, you're talking about cultural influences pretty much governing a young mind that ends up, again, emulating what it sees, becoming what is surrounded, this person. So here's the thing, man. Let's take my high school, for example. I went to Stratford High School.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't a bad school. It actually was a great school, but they shifted the zones. So then you had middle class going to school with, and don't take this personal, but lower class. So you had middle class living with project people, like in the same school.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you had about four or five different sets all in one school.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so you had North Second, you had South Eight, you had Inglewood, you had the bottom. I mean, you had all these in one set. So you had to be extremely careful which hallway you walk down.
Yeah.
Right? Because if you don't have that education or understand what they're saying to you, you might go home with two black eyes.
Yeah.
And more often than not, like without your shoes.
Yeah.
So it was it wasn't a good experience for most, where I grew up I went to school in a predominantly black high school. And thank goodness they changed out the leadership we all learned to go to school together. But like I said, there was just a difference in how I grew up and how they grew up. You feel me? Like where they honor gold teeth and sagging pants and yada yada. That is what they were accustomed to. There was their neighborhood. There was their upbringing. You even get middle class. And, you know, and you get these two diversities going to school, same race, but still diverse.
Yeah, because of the upbringing.
Right. So you got two different cultures coming together in one school. And, bro, before you know it, the whole entire school is acting the same way. The whole entire school is talking the same way. And bro, it's all about influence and exposure.
It's much easier to be influenced in a negative way than it is to be an influencer in a positive way.
Right. So, but even then, man, back to the thing about choice is I had a choice to follow them or I had the choice to make my own path.
Yeah.
You feel me? So some people ask, when you moving back to Nashville? I'm never moving back to Nashville. The whole reason I moved out is because I knew I wouldn't make the right choices had I stayed in Nashville.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, as far as, you know, systematic racism goes, or oppression, I can't remember which one you said.
But I said systemic racism.
There you go, systemic racism.
But let's also clarify this. Well, no, finish your sentence.
No, you can go ahead.
No, okay. I'm sorry, this thought came to mind. If systemic racism is alive and well today and still very much so attacking the black community, we as people, and I'm speaking to black people right now, y'all got to stop blaming every white person for it.
Right.
Because I ain't sitting up in Senate making laws and passing bills that affect you in any way, bro. And I'm not oppressing you, and I never have. My pops didn't sit in a seat in the House of Representatives.
Right.
My mom was a drug addict. My grandpa struggled with alcohol. I had all kind of problems.
Right.
I didn't, you know, and that's most people. So I think, and I want to clarify that, I think that most white people see this systemic racism and they say to themselves, what is that? What is that?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because they're, when they think back on their own experience, and it may be egocentric in thought, they may be only able to see from their perspective. But when they look at their perspective, they say to themselves, wait a minute, I've never done anything to oppress a black person.
Right.
I've never done anything to, now you telling me I'm racist and...
Yeah, why are you mad at me? I didn't do nothing. Right.
Yeah.
So then flip the coin. Now you're prejudiced against me for something that I didn't even do.
Yeah.
So,
'cause you black.
Right.
Yeah, that's how it goes. Like, you black, I'm white. So you mad at me because of white privilege and systemic racism, and I'm mad at you because of Black Lives Matter and looting and rioting.
Right. And so now you become the hypocrite, but I can't say it. Because then I'm a racist if I say it back.
Yeah. It's a whole... This is what this mess on social media is doing. And I'll be honest with you. I think it's class warfare more than anything.
It is.
And I think it's political agenda.
Bro, trust me. I'm 100% on board with you, because every single time we get close to election, this is what happens.
Oh yeah, and if the system is still oppressing black people, which it's not, I'm not saying it isn't. Please don't mistake what I'm saying. If it is, it's some elite rich white folk and probably some elite rich black folk too. Because let's be 100% honest. We can look back over history. Black people have never had a problem with oppressing their own people.
Right.
Just like white people have never had a problem with oppressing their own people.
Right.
It's the condition of man. Yeah. Wickedness, immorality, and it transcends color.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the color of your skin is. Look, you can go back to Europe back in the day. There wasn't no black people in Europe, and they were slave owners, and there was people living in extreme poverty, and the rich folk was abusing the poor folk. You could go back to Africa where there wasn't no white folk, and the rich tribal leaders were abusing the people. We could go on for days and look through history, and we can see in every history of every civilization, no matter the color, no matter the race, there has been oppression. There has been rich people or wealthy people or people in power oppressing the people they govern.
Okay, so let me spell that out for y'all, because here's what makes me mad. Because look, let me tell you something. Don't think that I don't acknowledge the 430 some odd years that there were blacks. Don't think I don't acknowledge that. But let me tell you this.
You should.
Blacks were not and have not, you know, been the only slaves.
No.
Blacks were not the first slaves.
No.
And let me tell you something, that slavery had absolutely nothing to do with color. The only color that slavery had something to do with was green. It only has something to do with money. It whenever you see slavery, it always has something to do with money. It's always about the bottom dollar. Yeah. And if you want to draw it out in today's terms, there is still slavery.
It's still about the bottom dollar.
It's still about the bottom dollar. Okay, so you look at a drive-thru, bruh. Yeah. And okay, let me paint this out. Not taking jabs at Chick-fil-A, I'm just using them as an example, right? So you see how busy Chick-fil-A is.
I like Chick-fil-A.
You know what I'm saying? You see how busy they are, right?
They more
so
than crazy.
You got to think about how much food they have to have prepared, correct, and out the window on time.
Yeah.
Right? So, and I will go further to say that Chick-fil-A has some of the best service you'll ever get.
Oh, yeah.
You see what I'm saying? They greet you nicely. The food's always fresh. It's always good.
And they fast.
And they fast, right?
Yeah.
Do you think they're being paid exactly what they're worth to make that happen? The employees?
No, probably.
No. Probably absolutely not.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not being paid enough.
Chick-fil-A pays good, dude.
And right. Yeah. But here's what I'm saying is that there are some people who have great talent. They have great minds. They are absolutely phenomenal. Phenomenally gifted.
Yeah.
But when you work under somebody, you will never, ever be paid what you're worth, ever.
Yeah.
The only people that get to live on their own terms are the ones that own the company. Not the ones under the umbrella, bro.
The one who got the money.
The one who has the money.
Yeah.
So if you got to punch a clock, you a slave. If you got to punch a clock, you are a slave. And here's the thing. There's nothing wrong with having a job.
So Damian Marley made that song, Slave Mill.
Yeah.
You listen to Damian Marley?
Bro.
He was talking about how the slave mill still churning.
It still does. And there's nothing wrong with having a job. But there is something wrong if you work a job, but you don't make plans to have your own too. There's something wrong with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because now you're adopting a slave mentality, which means I got to work. I got to do what they tell me to do. I got to do what I got to do. Otherwise, what?
Yeah.
I don't get money.
Well, then we could also talk about like the prison system. That's one of the things I came across the other day, studying all this out. In fact, in the 13th Amendment, it clearly states that slavery is illegal unless it is punishment for a crime, which is very interesting.
Right.
Because unless you study that stuff, you don't know that. But that's the 13th Amendment. That's the amendment they wrote to free the slaves, and there's some stipulations in there.
Right.
So basically, I can enslave you if you break the law.
Yeah.
Well, I started studying the prison system. You know, that's $100 million a year, hundreds of millions of dollars a year. Organizations, the DOCs, the state penitentiaries, that I mean, it's all about money, bro.
Yeah.
From every, so you punch a clock to make money, which is a good thing. You should work.
It is a good thing.
A man shouldn't not work, because then he becomes idle and he becomes Paul says this about a woman, but I believe it's true about a man too, because you see it all the time. A man who doesn't work becomes idle, and he becomes a busybody in other people's business.
Yeah.
Look, you on Facebook all day posting stuff. Go to work.
Right.
Go get a job, man. Every time I look on Facebook, you posting something. Man, go get a job.
You posting or you finger scrolling.
Oh, you finger scrolling. Go get a job, dude. Stop posting every 2 minutes.
So, yeah. So, just to clarify, look, I am not saying you shouldn't work. I am saying you should not work and have a plan for exit.
Yeah, yeah. You should think about your future. But at the same time, the prison system, because we were talking about that systemic racism, or systematic oppression of the black race, because that's a hot topic nowadays. I think it's true, but I don't think it is true in the way they present it. Because here's the thing. If I tell you the truth about what I'm doing, then I expose myself. But if I make up a false narrative and make you believe something that I'm not even doing, then I don't expose myself and I keep destroying you.
Right.
So think about that. Really think about that, because I think that's what they do. I don't think it just applies to color, man, because I know a whole lot of white people that don't fit the bill when it comes to their statistics.
Right.
But I think if they create a narrative that isn't even truthful in order to distract you from what they're really doing.
Right. And bro, you know, the word ignorance doesn't mean you're stupid. It just means you have no knowledge in that particular area. Yeah. And ignorance is the absence of light in that area. And most of y'all get on Facebook and you just read stuff. And I don't care what platform it is. You just read stuff and you take it for what it is without doing your own research.
Oh, yeah.
And now you're sitting up here arguing with somebody who's stupid, don't have any knowledge about what it is or what it's like to be you. And you waste your entire day becoming a fool because they said something foolish.
It's just
an argument, bro. And so again, let's switch gears, you know. Let's talk about because I agree with everything you said about you know, like a systemic you know, racism and systemic oppression, but I also want to talk about it from a personal point of view, a PPOV. All right.
Yeah, because you big, I know you big choice. You pro-life, but you pro-choice. We ain't talking about abortion.
No, we ain't talking about
that. Oh, yeah, let's not even mention abortion. Oh, God, I can't. See, God brought that to my mind right now. Let's talk about Planned Parenthood just for a second.
Now, let's do it.
2 seconds. There are more young black babies that die every single day because of Planned Parenthood. Do you know that Planned Parenthood donates millions of dollars every year to Democratic campaigns?
Millions. Why? Because you keep their doors open.
I'm just going to throw it out there. They killing y'all in your own neighborhoods on the cool, like for real.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then they selling you a false narrative to make you hate white people.
Ta-da.
Yeah.
What's the ingredients in your food? Oh, this is supposed to be good for you.
Yeah.
We talked about that before. Like, what's in those ingredients you eating?
Yeah.
But now, from a personal point of view, Charles, here's one thing that drives me absolutely up the wall. Now, and those of you who are, again, those of you who are white, I love y'all. I've never had a racist bone in my body. I've always hung out with different races because
don't let him lie to you.
What am I doing sitting here with you, Charles?
I'm just messing with y'all.
But no, for real. You know what boggles my mind, dude, is that from a personal point of view, I know people talk about like having issues finding a job. From my own personal point of view, I have never in my life had an issue finding a job, right? Now, I have had an issue with being pulled over by the cops.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, difference, okay, the difference between the two is I know how to dress for a job. I know how to talk for a job.
That's it right there.
But when I'm riding around in a 2000 Trans Am with the T-tops off with rose gold teeth and sagging pants and my music's blaring, what do you think they think about me, Charles?
They stereotype you right away.
Do you absolutely think that they don't know what a Lil Wayne video looked like back then? Or you see what I'm saying? Or 50 Cent video? Like, you mean to tell me,
come
like...
Come on, man. Don't let them white cops fool you. They listen to Lil Wayne.
I ain't saying they don't.
I'm just saying they know who he is.
They're right. I'm not saying they don't.
No, I'm just messing with you.
But what I'm saying is, though, is do you not think that when they're going through the academy that they're not educated on what your threat should look like?
Oh yeah, they stare. Yeah,
and I may not even be an angry dude. I may not be I may not be a thug. I may not even be packing. But because I fit the bill,
you
got to pull me over.
Yeah, but that's not. And that's. I'm glad you brought that up because let's just talk about that for a second because that doesn't always necessarily have something to do with the color of your skin. Listen, I done been arrested a bunch of times by white cops. Been pulled over and been profiled. I got tattoos all over my hands, my neck, my arms, all over the place. I'm sagging my pants. I'm full of pills, full of weed. I roll the window down and weed smoke comes out the car. You know, like that type of stuff. Or I open the door. Or me and my buddy getting pulled over one night. He throws a 24-ounce tall boy out the window. Like the cops don't see a big Budweiser can flying out the window. Just stuff like that. You know, and... We white, but we still went to jail. And I got into it with the cops a few times. And I got friends that got into it with the cops a few times. They all white. And guess what? The cops did them foul and they went to jail.
You know, but here's the thing, though, Charles. Like, but here's the thing. When you get pulled over, bruh, it's one thing to know your rights. It's another thing to have an attitude.
Yeah.
It's another thing to just do what you're told. Now, again, I can't go on behalf of the narrative.
Well, yeah, explain that experience for us, because you don't really fit that whole thug bill. You dress like a white boy.
Shut up.
You really you may wear a backwards hat, but that's about it.
Yeah, so here's the tale of two different lifestyles. Before Christ, after Christ.
Yeah.
Okay? Two different lifestyles.
Yeah.
So before Christ, I sold weed. Before Christ, I drank. Before Christ, I hung out all times of night.
And you wore your pants halfway down your butt.
And I did.
You did?
And I had 6 goals on the bottom.
I don't, but no, you had them little snap-on goals that you...
Oh, no, that was real. That was real. I had a bottom grill. Six of them. Uh-huh. Bro, for real.
Oh, I believe you. I believe you, bro.
He clowning me over here. But again, two different lifestyles. And I remember being in college in Clarksville, and you talking about being like, it's like being pulled over was obsessive, dude. Like, it got to the point where I didn't want to leave the house because it was happening too frequently. You know what I mean? So it was happening two or three times a week.
When you was in college in Clarksville, you was still tripping.
Yep.
Still tripping.
Okay. Still tripping. Class in the morning, slanging in the evening. Terrible. But, you know, it got to the point where, dude, they would park outside of my look, because it's like a small apartment complex building. It was like 6 apartments in a little strip or whatever. And it was like right across the street from like a trailer park or whatever. And there was this little empty parking lot down like maybe 100 yards from my apartment. But they would post up there and they would sit for hours. They would do it all the time. I was like, you know what? I'm hungry, but I can't even leave the house.
Because you in Clarksville, Tennessee, right?
Right.
That's a whole bunch of white folk out there, isn't it?
Dude, it is, but it's also a military town too. But it was also it was big for drugs then too.
So I'm just wondering why they said, are they specifically sitting outside your building,
dude? I could never tell. Yeah. I could never tell. I mean, because I don't know if they was watching.
But when you tripping like that, you think they are.
No, but here's the thing. I would like on one occasion they sat outside all day from like 3 p.m. to like 9 p.m. They sat outside my apartment complex.
Yeah.
So I got out, got in my car, And then as soon as I backed up and drove up the road, they turned the lights on and they started following me up the street.
Yeah.
So I go make a left turn, go up to the end of the road, to the main road. As soon as I get to the stop sign, they turn the lights on and pull me over.
Yeah.
So 2 days before that, I had been pulled over for having like a broken taillight.
And they searching you?
They didn't search me this time. And then this particular day, like 2 days later, I pulled up to the top of the road. I pull off in this little thing and then within this month, I've been pulled over like maybe 2 or 3 other times. And there was never any cause for it. They wouldn't write me tickets. They just wanted to see who was driving the car.
They wanted,
you know what I mean? It was unnecessary, bro. So it was like they looking at how I dress. They see me get in the car.
They profiling.
Yeah, they profiling. And so like this time, and honestly, bro, if I had done this particular move, like today, I'd probably been shot. Because they pulled me over, dude. I get out of the car. I throw my hands up like, what? If it happened like today, dude, they'd shoot me.
That's the one time I had the cops pull a gun on me, bro. I hopped out of a car like that. I had some Zambars on me. I threw them under the seat. I hopped out. I threw it in park and I hopped out the car. Dude, that was a mistake.
Yeah.
Bro, that was a mistake.
Yeah. And so that's the thing, bro. It's like... this had happened multiple times, like just within that month, dude, where they just kept just pulling me over. So again, no reason. Wasn't like I didn't use my blinker. I wasn't speeding. Just, you know what I'm saying?
So there was probably some.
There was a lot of profiling.
Racial profiling.
Yeah, bro. And that same look. And I brought the lifestyle down here to Knoxville when I first moved here.
Okay, so now do you think that racial profiling was because they're racist? Or do you think it's because...
No, I just thought that was... I just fit the bill. And here's the thing. And whatever... And I don't know exactly how they're trained. So I can't really say. I just know they were more than likely viewing me as a threat. You know?
That's an interesting question, right? Because how do you say, was the racial profiling racist? Because it sounds like, well, racial profiling, it has to be racist. In all actuality, let's define the word racism real quick. Because it is a person or a groups of people who believe that they are superior to another groups of people according to maybe color or belief or whatever.
Yeah.
So maybe they can racial. I could sit back and say that dude may have drugs on him. and the color of his skin may be black. Does that make me a racist?
Nah.
Do you think that's what the cops do?
Here's the thing. I think they have a type. They got a type. So let's be real. I went to jail a couple months ago. We're not going to get into the details about that. But if I had to put a type on it, there's some dudes in there look like you. Tattoos on the neck.
Oh, yeah, I know.
You get what I'm saying?
I used to go in there all the time. I know, bro. They full of dudes in there that look like me. But
I didn't do nothing illegal, though.
That's why I'm asking you all these questions. I wanted you to share your experience because I got the same experience, and I'm white.
Right. I believe they have a type. Yeah. Now, I'm not going to say that there are some cops who may absolutely be racist.
There are absolutely, because it's
blatant, dude. It's on. You can't deny that.
Yeah, there's absolutely cops out there that are racist.
But I don't think every single cop is a racist. No. I don't think the majority
of the cops are racist.
Because I'll be honest with you, bro. It's like every time I've gotten pulled over, I've never given a cop. Well, put it this way: since I've changed, like I've never given a cop attitude. You feel me? It's I respect the officer. He's doing his job. You feel me?
And they don't really give you no grief.
Right. But if he comes to my window and I'm like, what do you want? Or if I got attitude, now I'm escalating the situation. Yeah.
I watched a video the other day where the dude claimed that he was a black Hebrew Israelite. That was his nationality. And that he was a foreign diplomat. So he didn't have to listen to the cops. God, dude, I'm sitting there watching these two cops just go back and forth with this dude, and this dude is just going off on him, bro. And I'm thinking to myself, they going to shoot you.
Well, you're right.
You're going to end up getting in. Is it that serious? They put...
Right. So here's the thing is that, you know, I've always respected an officer. You know what I'm saying? Never had a reason to disrespect an officer. You feel me? Because now I will say this. Because of all that's going on, I don't like cops riding behind me. If I have the opportunity, I will pull off, let them pass, and I'll get behind him. I'm just being real.
Oh, that's probably a good.
And I'm just being real because I'm gonna put this out there. Most white males.
I don't worry about that.
I'm gonna say most white males. Probably don't have to pray about whether or not they're going to come home if they get pulled over.
No, I don't even think about that.
That's you feel me? You know what I'm saying? That's not a thought for a white male, but it's a thought for a black male.
It's a thought for,
you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if he's pissed off because of, you know, what the whole world is doing. You understand?
Yeah. Or maybe he's racist.
You feel me? So I would go to say that most of you who are white and white males, you don't think about that. Like, you know what I'm saying? If I catch a cop on his bad day, does that take me from coming home to my daughter in the morning? You get what I'm saying? Does that keep you from coming home? And most people don't think about that. You think, he resisted arrest or he did this. Look, we don't have the whole story. We don't. And he, you know what I'm saying? And that's the thing, we don't have the whole story.
That's a problem right there.
It is a problem. Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? I would, but you definitely hear me go on record and say $20 ain't worth a man's life. I'm not going to sit up here and say that. I don't care if he resisted arrest or not. That was just blatant murder. But what I am saying is that, you know, if you're a white male, 9 times out of 10, you do not think about whether or not you're going to make it home. Now, that's something that I have to worry about if I see a cop riding behind me. It's a subconscious because of all that has transpired.
So at one point, you know, I may have thought sideways about the cops being behind me. And I may have had a thought where I'm on it if they try to mess with me. But that wasn't because I was white. It was because I was a criminal.
Right. It's because you was riding dirty.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Is like, Charles, I don't ride illegally. Like, I don't have a pistol.
Now you don't.
Now I don't.
Now it's like, well.
So now it's like, yo, do I.
And everything that's going on in the world creates so much tension between the races. Let's just say everything that's going on social media creates so much tension between the races. And I agree with you. I don't think that's the everyday experience of a white man. I don't think it is the everyday experience of a white man that they hop in their car, the cop gets behind them, and they think, man, I wonder if this dude's going to pull me over because of the color of my skin. Or I wonder if this dude's going to pull me over because he thinks I got drugs in the car.
And here's the thing, Charles. Like, I'd never know. I have been pulled over from the cop facing me. We both at the light. Yeah. Both about to turn onto the on-ramp for the interstate.
Yeah.
I don't even get to make the turn before he turns his lights on.
Yeah.
Like, why are you pulling me up? You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Why are you pulling me over? We're facing each other. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's daytime.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need my headlights. Yeah. Like, why are you pulling me over?
So there's definitely some racial profiling going on.
Right. So, and that's the thing. Like, I don't think a white male ever has to think about that.
No, I don't disagree with that, because now that I don't behave the way I behaved and I dress completely different, I don't have drugs on me, none of those things. That's not even a thought in my mind.
Right.
You know, the cop gets behind me and I don't even pay him no mind.
Right. And so there's things like, while I still can't say, you know, every white person is racist, I can't say, you know, cops are racist, but I can't say racism does exist in some form and facets. Like I told you about, like, early childhood experiences. You know, I played football at my high school. We show up for a homecoming game out in Cheatham County, and somehow they were allowed to make floats with black people hanging from the floats. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. You told me about that.
Right, right. And, yeah. You know, you're playing a game, and in between plays, they tell
Cheatham
you.
Cheatham County. That's yeah,
right.
That sounds right. Like some backwood hillbilly stuff.
It is. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, I get tackled. They get up and whisper in my ear hole, you know, like, go home, nigga. Like, that's what they say.
Yeah, yeah.
You feel me? Like, those kind of things are what I've experienced.
So then they definitely and I know that's true, because I noticed that in some parts of East Tennessee, where it's heavily white, they definitely got some white folk that got some racial tendency.
Right, right. And so I can't say that's the majority. But here's what's crazy, Charles. Here's what's crazy. And my church might be mad at me, but I love y'all anyway. Here's what's crazy. Like, so the church that I go to, I've been one of very few, or the only at some standpoints, in 12 years where I'm the only black one in the only black person in the congregation.
Yeah, I know.
Only
I used one to go there.
Right? You know, besides my kids who are half black, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
oh yeah, you used to date a white woman. Let's talk about that. No, I'm messing with you.
Oh man, so
white men are racist, but white women ain't. I know.
Yeah,
that's how it goes.
They're racist because we date white women.
Yeah. Yes.
all right, time out. Yeah. All right, but no. Here's the thing, man. Okay, so let's talk about it. I've experienced racism, like in my church. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Not, you know, it's disrespectful for me to put names out there, but let's look at a couple of scenarios. You know, now during this time I've gone to my church, I've had, you know, where something like this happens, where, you know, where a black man is killed by a police officer,
yeah,
or gunned down out in public or something like that. You know, of course, because of things that have happened in the past, the black community gets hurt. It's felt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They feel it. And again, I told you, I made this statement the other day that we do have to address that it's a human taking another human's life.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we do have to address that. However, you know, when you operate in your opinion and you get on Facebook and you start saying certain things, and yo, I've been worshiping the Lord with you for 12 years.
Yeah, yeah.
You, like, I almost wonder where your heart and where your mind is, because some of the stuff that you say is directly offensive toward me.
Yeah.
And I can get my feelings and say something about it, but you smile on my face every Sunday.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean?
Because what they say is not, I think, and this is just my opinion, but I've noticed, and I'm not going to say I know who you're talking about, because I don't, but I may.
There's a couple.
I think they're so blinded by their own political opinion that they pick sides and they share statistics and post things that are right wing, conservative or left wing Democrat.
And right.
Please understand that I don't know about you, but I don't really have a political allegiance to any of them clowns.
Right.
So I'm speaking to you from a place of, I'm not watered down with political nonsense.
Oh, don't think I'm going to be watered down either.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, you come to me and you say, oh,
but they say stupid stuff, and I've seen some posts that are pretty stupid.
Yeah, you say stupid stuff, and it's blatantly offensive.
Yeah, yeah.
Because not only are you talking about me, you're talking about my kids.
Yeah, you talk.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean? You're talking about, you know, saying not only my race, but you're talking about my mom. You're talking about my grandma when you say stupid stuff like that, and you're blatantly insensitive about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you smile on my face like you just didn't say what you just said, and don't give me that garbage about you don't see. I don't see color. Like I don't want to hear that because if you saying you don't see color, then you don't see me at all.
You wouldn't. Well, you wouldn't be polite.
Right.
Good point.
You don't see
so
me.
So if
at
you
all.
Didn't see color, I mean, what do I look like to you? I'm black.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And if you want to get personal about it, that you honestly don't see Jesus.
Yeah, yeah.
You honestly don't see the disciples that you fought. Like, you don't see them either. Well,
okay, and here's an interesting thought because I had this thought earlier. It's interesting to see how quickly a person's allegiance will just shift. But, you know, two, 3 weeks ago on Sunday morning, they were super Christians. Now, since all this stuff happens, they done threw forgiveness and mercy out the window.
Right.
They political crusaders.
Right.
Who follow a party or an agenda.
Yeah.
So it's nonsense.
It is nonsense.
It's hypocritical.
It's very hypocritical. You know what I mean? Like that's just one scenario. Like, I got to deal with the stupid stuff that you say. And me being a Christian, I keep my mouth shut. Because...
Well, maybe it's not always best for you to keep your mouth shut.
No, it's not always... Hence this podcast. but no, it's not always... It's not always good for me to keep my mouth shut.
Sometimes,
but because I respect my past and I respect the house of God, I don't have that conversation under that roof. You feel me? Mm-hmm. But also in certain areas, or the certain scenario was where, you know, the last time something like this happened, my pastor was like, "Yo, we need to address this, and I want to address it with the church." Mm-hmm. And so one Sunday he addressed like the hatred between Nazis and Jews, right?
Yeah, yeah. Is that when he did the foot washing?
This is when he did the foot washing.
Oh boy.
And then and then the very next Sunday he talked about you know, cultural differences between blacks and whites.
Yeah.
So what he did was he brought me on stage, and the night before I didn't even know what he was planning to do. He said, "Yo, can I use you in an illustrated sermon?" I said, "Absolutely." And so what he did was he brought me on stage and he washed my feet. Yeah. And this was just to exemplify how Jesus served his disciples.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And he was saying that, you know, our love for one another should, you know, we should serve one another out of love, out of brotherly love. Yeah. You know what I mean? So he washed my feet. And so that sparked a little piece of hatred within one of the members there. And this
he
same
left. Guy. I know who he is.
Oh yeah, he left. And here's the thing, like this guy, this is what, and here's the thing, this didn't even make me mad. I thought it was hilarious that you didn't have guts enough to talk to me.
I thought it was kind of funny.
Well, here's the thing. It's like he spoke to me. Look, Charles, here's how long he put on a mask. For about 8 or 9 years, bro.
He'd been there for a while.
He'd been there for 8 or 9 years. We talked every single Sunday before service started. I shook his hand or hugged his neck every single Sunday.
Yeah.
And so you call my pastor a nigga lover because he washed my feet. You feel me? Mm-hmm. And now look, y'all may not like that word. I don't like the word either, but I'm just calling it like it is. Like, I got to say it because if not, you know, because if not, you won't understand, you know, what that feels like. You know what I'm saying? To somebody like you trusted, somebody you broke bread with, you had communion with each other. You feel me? And then you call me out of my name. You blatantly disrespect me. You know what I mean? And then you leave the church because your feelings got hurt. But yet you would much rather judge me by the color of my skin versus ask me what it's like to be me versus ask me, you know, what makes a certain part of the black community do this? Like, how do they struggle? But yet you succeed. Like, you don't ask those questions.
So let's also talk about that, because let's talk about the real problems in the black community, because let's be honest, 100% honest. Police brutality is not the biggest problem in the black community.
It's not.
Nowhere near. In fact, it is probably on the scale of things, it is probably the least of problems within the black community. That's not me saying it should happen, and then that's not me saying it's okay when it does happen. That's not what I'm saying. But one also does have to look at facts and statistics and say that the black community has much bigger problems than police brutality. Much bigger problems. In fact, if I believe that there is a system that oppresses the black people, then your elected officials are your problem, are a part of your problem. Not just my elected officials. Because you can, it's interesting, and I say this, And I've researched this. We were talking about this the other day. We were talking about Baltimore. We were talking about the fact that the mayor is black. The chief of police is black. Most of the city council members are black. And it is one of the most violent and most impoverished cities to live in the United States. And I don't think it has anything to do with the color of the leadership's skin. I think it has something to do with Democratic policies.
Right.
I think it has something to do with the influence that probably white politicians, white Democrats have on these younger politicians coming up. They place these Democratic policies in place in cities, and they absolutely oppress and destroy the people there.
Right.
And then what it leads to is it leads to crime, it leads to drugs, it leads to everything that is going on in the black communities, gun violence, gang banging. Let's say this. The police brutality is not excusable. And
not at all.
Not excusable. And it's not okay. We do need to take steps to solve it.
Right.
But it is just a byproduct of the condition of the black communities.
Right. And here's the thing, it's not the biggest issue that we face. I don't believe that at all. You know, and I will say that some of the stuff that we go through, it can be self-inflicted. And, you know, we talked about this too. That's the whole fact that, you know, if we're going to be serious about making a change in this country, like as black people and whites, if you joining in, if we're going to be like really sincere about making differences, you know, you like we can't be out promoting gangster rap that have anything to do with, you know, black on black crime, shooting one another. But yet you get mad if a white cop murders a black person. That just makes you hypocritical. It makes you.
Yeah. So it's okay for a black person to murder a black person, but if a white cop does it, it's racist.
Right. And it's okay if you call a black person N-word, but it makes you mad if you feel me.
It's double standard.
It is double standard and hypocrisy. And that's the thing that and I think we glorify gangster rap all too much. They have absolutely nothing positive to uplift or bring up these, you know, young males in general now, because it's not just black males that are being affected by the music, it's white males too.
Yeah, and the situation between if something doesn't shape in the black communities as far as change, different leadership, people who reduce poverty, stimulate economies in these areas, who create job opportunities, who fight drugs, if you got people, your leadership absolutely has to go to war against drugs, or this nation's leadership needs to go to war against drugs, because drugs is one of the biggest problems that transcends color as well, and is destroying many homes, and it destroyed my life for a long time. By the glory of God and by the sacrifice made by Jesus Christ, I found freedom from it. That's not everybody's story. Most people don't find freedom from it. But the condition between, or the animosity between the black man and the police officer is only going to get worse if
right.
it doesn't change. Because you got to think of both perspectives. A black man comes up in the hood and doesn't have much, and let's say he doesn't even sell drugs. Let's say he works.
Right.
Let's say, because I don't want to reduce every black man to a drug dealer, because that's wrong.
Yeah.
Let's say he works at, I don't know. Throw something out there. Walmart.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to say McDonald's, because that's a bad job. Y'all call me a racist. That white boy said all black people work at McDonald's. I could already hear it. No, Walmart. Let's not even say Walmart, man. Let's say Target.
That's the same thing.
I know. I'm just messing right now, bro. But so let's say you got him a good job. He's a supervisor at Walmart. And but he grows up in that neighborhood and he's surrounded by that all the time. And most of his friends probably say F the police and sag their pants and listen to that music. And the cop wakes up every morning and he puts his vest on and he kisses his wife and he wonders if he's going to come home that night because the neighborhood he patrols is full of gangbangers and dope dealers. And there are a lot of people in that community who are good people, but he's not dealing with the good people from that community because the good people don't ever get in trouble. He's dealing with all the criminals and all the thugs who want to take his life every day. So I wonder if he becomes racist because of his job. I wonder if he starts to develop a little bit of hatred.
Right.
Because of the things he sees. The 14-year-old who decided to let an AK-47 ring through an apartment building. And now he got to pick up a little girl's brains off the sidewalk.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So don't be so judgmental and don't be so quick to not see things through a person's perspective just because their skin color is different from yours.
Yeah. Because I would go further to say that, you know, I've done personal training in Knoxville, man, for years, bro. And I want y'all to understand that a lot of my clients that they're millionaires and I'm black.
Yeah, yeah.
and they're white and I go in their home and
they oppressing you?
Nope. They pay good. They pay good, but not even that. They ask about my family. You know what I mean? Like sometimes they'll give me tickets to like a University of Tennessee football or basketball game.
So so racism isn't as alive as they would like for us to think.
Nope. You know, I don't think it is. You know, now first when I first moved down here, I was like, yo, ain't no black people down here.
No, they ain't a lot. I say the same thing, and I'm white.
And here's the thing, dude. Is like I thought they were trying to be funny. Because, like, when I worked out of East Knoxville, all the white folks were like, hey, brother. I was like, you trying to be funny? Like, I was like, we going to have a problem? But no, that's just how they talk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, no.
Oh, yeah, that's the church. Hey, brother.
Yeah, yeah. But no, this was actually a food city when I was...
I grew up in southern Louisiana, bro. When I got out here, too, I was like, where's all the black people at? Black people around here.
Bro, it was a culture shock.
Yeah,
straight up culture shock, man. So,
and then what you realize is all the black people in East Tennessee are on one side of town.
One side of town.
Yeah.
One side of town. Side and of you town. Already know what that town, that side of town is.
It's cutthroat.
It's cutthroat, bro. And so that's the thing, man. It is a problem.
That's a problem.
And so again, the only way we make the change from that and help them see a different side of life, man, is through exposure, man. And if you're not willing to expose any of those kids to anything better, then how do you expect for them to change? Because it's easy to look at them and say something like, well, they know that it's against the law. Why would they do it? Well, but if that's how you grew up, then you don't see any other way. Like, that's how you're conditioned.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So unless you are willing to take time out of your busy schedule to go and educate them. Because let me tell you something, dude. Like, it's only because... You know, a married couple by Jim and Melanie who decided, you know what, we're going to go to Stratford. We know they don't have a good reputation. We know there's some thugs in there, but we're going to go and spread the love of Jesus anyway. We're going to see if they want to hang out with us outside of school, get to know Christ. We'll feed them. We'll do whatever. You know what I mean? They took time and invested into me, which is part of the reason why I'm here doing what I'm doing right now. You know, you talk about this little dorky dude named Troy who couldn't play basketball worth a lick, but decided he wanted to have like a church basketball league and would take us. You know, us, you know, who were, you know, dude, we're hellions, man. We're bad. We made fun of him. We talked about his glasses, made fun of how he sung. Like, we're terrible, but that dude still poured into us, man. Like, he had a love for us like no other. And he'd come get us every Tuesday. We play basketball and we sing songs with him. And then we talk trash to him, huh? And we talk trash to him. But you know what? He was consistent. He showed up every day.
Yeah.
He was like, you know what? I don't like these black kids. I ain't going to deal with them. They're rude. They're disrespectful. He understands, like, I need to expose them to something else. How else do I expect them to change? Yeah. So all of y'all who are sitting on social media and you talking out the side of your neck and you saying stupid stuff.
Oh, yeah. And you ain't doing nothing.
And you ain't doing nothing about it. You know, why don't you take a note? Because there's some people out here who actually want to make a difference. They actually want to make changes.
Yeah.
And as long as you sit behind that cell phone and you play God and you act like you better than everybody else.
Let's put this out there because me and you talked about this the other day. You're absolutely right, but we need to call and stir up black men.
Yeah,
because I spent years in a black community trying to reach young black men for 14 to 17 years old, and I'm not saying I didn't reach them, But I'm not saying that I was as effective as a black person would be.
Because again, it's all about relevance. Yeah. And they're like, okay, well, it's easy for you to say, Charles, you're white.
You're white.
You're white. What do you know about the black struggle?
Yeah, what do you know about it?
Like, I ate ramen noodles just like you, bro.
All my dad bought was ham sandwiches, bro. I ate ham. I didn't even like mayonnaise. I hated ham sandwiches by the time I was, bro, for real. It was just me and my pops.
You know, their rebuttal would be, at least you had ham. We ate whiskey. Sandwiches. Yeah. Wish we had some meat on that bread.
Yeah, wish we had some meat on that bread. Nah, bro. Y'all didn't even eat wish sandwiches because y'all got all kind of white people from the church buying y'all groceries and food. Bro, I loved. Stop lying to me. But I know that's not everybody's story. That was their story. Them boys used to hit me up all the time, go to the store, go buy something. I was good with it, but at the same time, you know, things happen and I ended up getting married, having kids, and I just wasn't able to do it anymore. But I think for the most part, to just sit back and talk about trying to make a change, to discuss social media post all day and not actually get out there and do anything, that's hypocrisy.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because
you're not spreading love. All you're doing is spreading hatred, man.
And I'm not saying you got to give every single day of the week, man. Look, I go one day a month. That's all I can go. And I go into a community that is, and I don't deal with kids. I deal with homeless and drug addiction, and it's in a bad community here in Knoxville. I'm only able to do once a month now because I work all the time, but I still go, and I still show that I'm there for people, and I pour myself into people, and I do it for a reason. I do it with the hopes that people's lives will change. If you just gonna sit back and talk about it, just shut up.
Right.
Just please. Stop talking about it.
Please shut up.
Yeah, because really all you're doing is you spreading you divide. Most of the people who just sit back and talk about it, you can tell because they divide.
And I'll be honest with you. Most of the people social media talking, they claim to be Christian.
Almost all of them,
your main job is to win others to Christ. How are you going to win somebody to Christ if you...
Yeah, but we throw that around so loosely now. I'm a Christian.
Right.
I'm in the club smoking weed Saturday night. I'm a Christian.
But what I'm saying is...
I'm drinking Hennessy with my...
No, but here's the bigger thing is, though, like, I go to church with most of these people. Who on social media talking trash. Like, I go to church with y'all.
Guess who don't go to church there no more? Me. I don't even have to deal with it.
But seriously, man, I'm like, please. Because, like, our job really is to win people to Christ. And you're not going to do it that way. Even if you're not trying to win people, I don't care if you don't go to church, if you don't believe in God, you're not going to stop racism by posting your opinion.
Well, now let's be real clear. I don't want to say that. I'm glad you brought that up. You're not going to stop racism, period.
Right.
All this we doing right now, this ain't going to stop racism.
No.
As long as men are alive, there will be racism. As long as men are alive, there will be evil, there will be wickedness, and there will be hatred.
Right.
And that's just that. Get over it.
So the question is...
Just affect who you can affect.
The question is, what are you going to do about it? Affect them the right way.
The right way.
Like, yeah, don't sit there and make people angry and hate you and dislike you. Yeah. All you're doing is sowing discord between people. That's all you're doing.
I love it too. I see people, well, actually, here's the facts. Blah, 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 blah.
The fact is...
What did that do?
The fact is, you're a hypocrite like the people you're talking about.
Yeah, because that didn't do nothing, man. That didn't do nothing at all. There's a right time to speak, and there's a right time to be silent. I think of Jesus. I think of Jesus when they delivered him to Pilate. And Pilate is just grilling him like, hey, come on, man. And he ain't got... Nothing. He had nothing to say. Nothing. You know why he had nothing to say? Because he knew he wasn't guilty of anything. He knew he was doing what God had called him to do. And he knew that regardless of what he said, it probably didn't matter. So he kept his mouth shut.
Yeah, 9 times out of 10, if you got a...
wisdom.
Yeah, if you got to talk about what everybody else is doing, if you got to seek out other people's problems, 9 times out of 10, you guilty.
First off, if you're on Facebook stunting for likes, and if you're on Facebook doing this whole, I see a post, I'm going to share it and share my opinion about it, you already guilty because you don't even know if that post is real.
Right.
You don't even know if it's truthful. You ain't got no idea. A witness that is called truth is established between what? 2 or 3 witnesses. Witnesses. So you see a post on Facebook that says a black man got whatever, whatever. You don't know if that's true.
Right.
They've been, there's all kind of posts on Facebook right now about this happened, that happened. And then fact check comes up. This ain't true. This ain't true.
Right.
This ain't true. Now, you done shared the post. You done put your whole opinion behind it. And fact check then came out and said it's not true. Now, maybe fact check's lying to you. Maybe it is true. I don't know. Yeah. You don't know. It's confusion.
Right.
And you look dumb chasing after confusion.
But all you're doing is spreading rumors, though. Stop it.
Yeah. All you're doing is spreading nonsense. So, I think what our main purpose in this podcast today was to acknowledge the fact that there is a problem.
Yeah, there is a problem.
There's a big problem in this country, especially for the black community. Not that we believe, or not that I believe, that racism is so alive and that, you know, I'm not with that. But and I'm not with that, and I'll never be with that, because it hasn't been my experience. And you may say, well, that's egocentric, if you even know what the word egocentric means.
Right. And so that's the thing, is like, you know, you can't be so caught up on the past that you won't do nothing about the future. Because a lot of what y'all are arguing about, you throwing up stuff that happened years ago. Yeah. You know what I mean? You know.
Well, see, what my experience was, man, I always hung out with all kind of black kids. I didn't experience all kind of racism.
Right. I hung out with all kind of white kids. So the thing is, you know, God asked Samuel a question in 1 Samuel 16. He said, how long will I mourn for Saul, seeing as I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Yeah. Now, here's the thing. I want to just take that little small piece. Like, how long are you going to mourn over what happened? Like, when are you going to get over that? Like, you know, so like, when are you going to do something about it is the question. Like, are you going to sit and like keep moping about it and talk about what happened years ago? Or are we going to do something about it? Because honestly, you know, in this cliche, like, be the change you want to become, yo. Like be the change. So if you want to see things change in the country, you're not going to do it by spreading hatred on Facebook. You're not going to do it by posting your comments and your opinions all the time. It's not going to happen.
No.
But if somebody stands up, like, we're, you know, and I think that's something we ought to talk about, Charles, is what are we going to do to resolve the issue? Like that's what I want to get to.
So
like,
where is the solution at?
You know, I mean, it don't matter whether we're taking, you know, like whether we're taking, you know, like whether we go back to, where young blacks are, whether we, invite some people to Bible study. I don't know. Let's talk about these community issues. How we want to address it? Do we want to go and speak to them? Like what? There's so many different solutions. There's a lot of them, but we're not going to get anywhere by arguing about it.
Yeah.
We're not going to get nowhere by arguing about it. But I tell you what, I know if we want to change what the outcome is in young black communities, I know for a fact, I can't say, I'm just saying black community, period. I know for a fact there's got to be enlightenment. There's got to be some knowledge shared. You know,
which means you got to invest.
You got to invest. You got to. Invest. And if you ain't got money, then you got to invest some time. And, you know, and if you're not willing to help, then just shut up.
Yeah. And you better have a little bit of money, because you're going to have to, because I learned that. You doing outreach, man, and you trying to win over these young men's hearts who are struggling. Sometimes they ain't even got money for food. Buying them something to eat goes a long way. You know, you gotta invest. You gotta be selfless. You gotta be willing to walk in what you claim you walk in.
Right.
Let's close it though, because I'm tired. I gotta work. work tonight.
Yeah, no, we're good, man. But pretty much, we shared y'all's thoughts, our thoughts. Now, here's the thing: you're more than willing to comment, but don't put nothing stupid or derogatory. I promise I will block you. I will ban you. We're not gonna do that, and we definitely didn't post this for that kind of thing.
They've been putting some stupid and derogatory. Well, we ain't even really talked about the topic, have we?
Yeah, bro. Here's the thing. I mean, I think I've shared enough to make people mad. I think you shared enough to make people mad.
Oh, today?
But yeah.
Oh, they'll get over it.
Yeah, they'll get over it.
They ain't gonna do nothing about it.
They not.
But what they gonna do about it?
They not. But I'm just saying, like, have some common sense. Like, be an adult, man. Like, for real. We're going to wrap it up right here. I think we said more than enough, which I'm good with it. You good with it? You got anything you want to add?
Yeah, I'm good with it. I'm good. I'm real good with it. Hey, listen, if you upset, you can private message me. I love you.
Yeah.
I'll send you a smiley face emoji.
What? You're a fool, but all right, man. We love y'all, man. We're going to get out of here. We'll see y'all next week.
Yeah.